if in my high moments I have done some good, offered some service, shed some light, healed some wounds, rekindled some hope, or stirred some warmth of apathy and indifference, or in any way along the way helped somebody, then this campaign has not been in vain.
With your host, Andrew Gordon.
Alicia Oxy, welcome to the Yoga Moves You podcast. And God, I hope I said that right.
You so did. You did. That was impressive. See, you got it. Yes, thank you.
Well, I practiced. I mean, for 30 minutes, I was just staring at a screen and recording myself. Alicia Oxy. I'm going to say it right. So you are currently in the land of California, Los Angeles.
I am. Where are you? Yes, I am. Where are you?
I am in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I've been for the last 10 years, by way of Long Island, New York.
Long Island, New York. Oh my gosh, I love the South. This is already going so well. I'm a Kentucky girl.
In fact, you grew up in Northern Kentucky. You were a self-proclaimed tomboy when you were a child, playing sports. I hear a lot of women that are these actresses or they're beautiful women, and they say, I was a tomboy. But I suspect, for some reason, intuitively, that you really were.
Yes, I think by way of survival, I was the only girl in the neighborhood for a really long time. And also my dad, who, bless his heart, really wanted boys. He was a big jock. He got two girls. So, you know, weekends with dad were like tennis and then golf and then soccer practice and then basketball practice. It was every sport possible. And I don't think I ever really knew what I looked like or visually how I was in the world or anything sparkly or makeup or anything like that until I was at least a teenager, if not older.
Wow. And you know, it's crazy that you were the try for a boy, at least one try for a boy.
Yeah.
I was the last try for a girl. I'm the youngest of four boys. And Alicia, they had my name picked out. And not only did they have it picked out, they told me it was supposed to be Allison Wendy and it's Andrew Wayne.
Oh, you were supposed to be Allison Wendy. I was supposed to be Kyle Robert. See if we could just do the rest of the interview. And Kyle Robert, everybody would have known how to pronounce, you know?
Nice. You can call me Allison and I'll call you Kyle.
Yes, I like it. Oh, Allison, it's so nice to meet you.
Kyle, it's a pleasure. So
where we could have, would have been.
I'll tell you, yeah. Kyle, it's a whole nother world and a whole nother life.
Yes.
But Alicia, you grew up in Northern Kentucky. I have to ask you, being with my limited knowledge of Kentucky, was it a very rural area or just more suburban?
It was more suburban. It's small town, but I could look at Cincinnati from where I grew up. But we never went on that side of the river. So it wasn't as rural as people think. I went to the University of Kentucky. That was much more rural. The whole city is just kind of based around the college. But everything is kind of what you imagine Kentucky to be. Everybody's friendly. There's nice horses and gorgeous grass and a lot of whiskey and tobacco.
Nice. Now you said you could literally see Cincinnati, like for real?
Yes. Yeah. So I grew up, we moved into a park. It's called DeVue Park and it's where the cool place where all the kids in high school used to come and hang out. It's this gorgeous park on a golf course. And there's what's called the Overlook where some people used to go and, you know, make out, but you could also go and see the gorgeous skyline of Cincinnati, which I think is one of the only best skylines where you can actually sit and view it or drive into it and view it. Like Manhattan, it's kind of hard to see from certain places.
Exactly.
But yes.
Were you close enough to see Pete Rose betting on his own games?
Like I said, we did not go to that side of the river when I was growing up. No. I mean, if only we had all this technology then, right? To see.
I only ask you because you said you were a tomboy and your dad might have, you know, been interested in that.
Well, so my dad was in St. Louis, so Cardinals fan. Oh, I know.
I'm a Mets fan. We're like, ugh.
I know. Sorry about that. Yeah. So I grew up with like Ozzie Smith, like going to a Cardinals game and watching him flip all over the place. Yeah. That was my jam.
Can you imagine, like, in all seriousness, like, thank God he never hurt himself, like, flipping into, like, seriously hurt himself. I know one
time. He hurt himself, kind of. Like, but the league probably wouldn't even let somebody do that these days because of insurance purposes. I mean, it was just, yeah, that's all I remember from going to those baseball games. Because let's face it, baseball, watching it's kind of boring. Unless you're in, like, the bottom of the ninth. Not interesting to watch. Not for me. But Ozzy, always fun to watch.
The wizard.
Yes.
So back to your sporty life. You were an avid player of soccer, and I'm going to talk more about your path into soccer and what happened. But during that time when you were playing soccer as a kid, you are stated, I got this from your website, that you secretly wrote poetry. So why did you have to write it secretly?
I don't know. I just felt it was really private. This is going to sound kind of ethereal and out there, but since this is a yoga podcast, I felt like a lot of the words and feelings and intensity that came through me when I was writing would be really misunderstood by other people. And you have to remember, I'm like, you know, rough and tumble around all with the boys. Who am I going to give my poetry to? Like, who am I going to read my poetry to? Yeah. So it was kind of kept to me, except for there was one poem that I did put into a contest and it won and it was published in a book with all these other middle schoolers across the nation.
What was it about? Big,
I think it was like 11. And it was about falling in love and being torn apart.
Ooh.
It was like heavy stuff like I was 11, but I remember I was in math class and I started doodling on my math book and these words, I remember I had to look up words later to know what they meant because they kind of just came out of me and I was like, is that even a word? And I looked it up later. Yeah. So it was kind of like, felt like I was an open portal. It was my first writing experience where I was like, I don't know what just wrote that. But
isn't that beautiful though? The state of flow when that happens.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I am trying to get back to in my adult life is just letting the flow and just putting the pen to paper and letting it come out whenever it comes out. You can't tell your creativity, hey, by the way, can you show up at 3 p.m. tomorrow? but you know, you realize as a kid, you're like this open portal and whenever it comes through, you had the time for it, hopefully. So now I'm trying to find that time again
and get
remember inspired.
The boy's name?
Of course I do. Nick Kemphaus. Oh gosh.
Hey,
yes.
Nick, where are you now, Nick? Where are you now? Who are you now, Nick, huh?
Oh man. So funny. So it was the first time I just felt, I think, ever felt betrayed in my life. And it was like, oh, so heavy. So heavy.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say that you can attribute some of your success to good old Nick.
Oh, of course. Thank you, Nick. Of course. Of course.
Say Nick. All right.
Say Nick.
Back to your sporty life. You took soccer all the way to the States with a travel team, which means that you were very competitive in it.
Yeah.
Other than just a rec league. So unfortunately, you had a bad knee injury in your senior year, which ended your career. Can you talk a little bit about what happened?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. Once again, this goes back to, I think, women and their intuition and gut and being like that open portal. You can sometimes listen and you can sometimes not. Yeah. It was senior year. First game, we were on somewhat of a crappy field, but we had new uniforms. I was so excited. I was starting in a new position. And I remember I was center midfield for that game.
And what were you playing?
I was usually right wing or I was front line. I was a forward usually because I was really, really fast. But I'd worked on my endurance that summer. So I was fast plus the endurance now. So
midfield, you have to go back and forth. That's like
to go back and forth. And like center midfield kind of helps control the game. So it's kind of a big honor to be in the center. Like it felt like I felt like, oh yeah, like this is so exciting. I'm getting trusted with this position right now. And I remember walking out on the field and I heard a voice say, get off the field, get off the field, get off the field. And I was like, what? I am not getting off the field. I have a uniform on. Like I could like smell the grass still. And it was in the first few minutes of the game and two girls were coming towards me. I was dribbling the ball and I went between my legs to take it back. And another girl was coming at me and I went to kind of slide the ball across a patch of grass and my ankle stayed where that patch of grass was and my thigh kept going.
Oh.
So everything popped and slid out of place. I looked up, all three all three of the defenders that were coming at me scattered. And the one of my coaches came running out on the field, and I was like, and I'd watched so many girls blow knees for, you know, 12 years. So I knew what I had done. And he was, I was like, tell me what happened. Tell me what happened. He was like, oh, let's get you off the field. Like, legal reasons, they can't say what happened until they have the MRI. And I was, I'm kind of sassy at times. And I was like, well, then I'm going to run off the field. He was like, I would advise you not to run. And I got off the field, and I think I was in such denial because I wanted to, I was also a track runner, and it was my senior year, and my sister had tried out for the varsity team and also made the varsity team. And it was our goal to hand off to each other in a relay because I'd competed at state. So I was like, okay, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. I got off the field and I ran, and my whole knee slid down my leg.
Oh.
And that was the end of my soccer career.
What was the diagnosis?
I had a blown, basically, knee, ACL, slight tear in the MCL and PCL. I mean, my knee was completely wiped out.
So you still struggle with it a little bit?
Oh, completely. Yeah. I have two blown knees, actually. One when that year, and I had surgery on that one, and I tried to get back really, really fast. And I have so many issues with it. And then in 2006, I blew my other knee playing volleyball because God knows I can't do anything not competitively. It was like sand, volleyball, recreational. And I blew my other knee, and I decided not to have surgery on it. And that one's totally fine.
Holy
so
God. Wow.
Jeez. Don't have surgery, people. That's my don't have surgery.
Unfortunately, at the same time that all that was happening, you lost your best friend. So
Yeah.
This friend of yours, was it a friend who you were way back into elementary school with?
No, we had been really fast, great friends since I was 14. I was 18 at the time. He was kind of like a big brother to me. He was a couple years older. And he just always really looked out for me. And he was away playing football. And I just blown my knee and I went down to go see him. And a week later, he went on a hunting trip, and it was early in the morning, and they were driving and they didn't make a turn. And he was thrown from the car and he died. Ooh. So it was like, yeah, it was, that was, senior year was not a good year for me.
No, not for you.
Not at all. Not at all. So I kind of went into a state of denial, full denial. I had to have some like help to kind of get me back to a healthy,
no doubt,
healthy place. So yeah, it was a grueling year for me. And I think about him constantly. If I would have had a little boy, we probably would have named him after my friend Artie. Yeah.
That's really sweet. It's understandable that you went through a search within during that time. And in your own words, you were searching for identity. And you referenced finding pen and paper that helped you to find those answers that you were looking for. So can you speak more about that?
It took me like six, 7 months to kind of figure out a healthy way to deal with all the pain inside of me or what I was trying to figure out. And when I would go and sit at Artie's grave, because I would go and sit, I went and sat there every day until they put a tombstone up for some reason. I started writing again. So I'd go and I'd sit and I kind of talked to him and see if there was anything. And the best way I could understand things is things would just start writing themselves. And because of that, I felt like there was some source of communication with him that way, or there was communication within myself and how to deal with the grief and, you know, whatever you want to believe spiritually. I felt like whatever guidance I was getting from either Artie's spirit or my own intuitive spirit, I had to heal myself. I don't think anybody, no therapist or parent or friend could really help me through that time. I everything that I built my life upon in my young 18 years was soccer and my good friends, and everything had kind of come cascading down at a rapid pace. And I had never had the tools to deal with that kind of grief.
Yeah, that is... I mean, really, everything in your life that made you you and was important to you, obviously besides your family, and two of the major components of your life were just taken away all at once or pretty close to each other. I can totally see how the search to find some sort of comfort and connection would be.
Yeah, and I just don't think we teach our youth, or at least I wasn't taught, how to listen to your gut and how to like self-soothe as human beings. I think we definitely need a community around us, but you have to be able to go within and figure out that resilience and that strength. And you have those kind of situations, I think, set you up for the rest of your life. You either can go down a dark, slippery road, which I definitely have the opportunity to do, you know, where you want to numb it.
Sure.
Or you can dive right into it and learn from it. There's so many different, like with yoga or even birthing my daughter, if you can breathe through pain, when you get to the other side, it's not as painful as you think. You just have to ride the wave or breathe yourself through it or just be present with it.
You know, you talked about the creative flow, and I'm just curious because I don't know this. I'm just asking off the cuff. It doesn't matter if it's Yoga Muzi podcast. It's really about life and people's stories in general, in my mind. Have you ever meditated or done yoga? Because I find...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Do you find that that helps you, if not all the time, but maybe here and there gets you into the state of flow or puts you in a place where you could access it easier?
Yes, I think, or at least the way I grew up, I didn't... when you have a lot of tragedy in your life, you notice that you tend to hold your breath. How interesting that yoga is all about breath work. And the more I've gotten to understand yoga, it's the poses that you think that you've been trying to put yourself, your body into for so long, don't really make sense if the breath is not connected. Same thing with creativity. If you're not breathing, you're not like open, you can't feel your body, your brain's not working as well. It all comes back to breath. Mm-hmm. So growing up, I didn't have that. So that's what I feel like the writing was for me. It was a meditative process, and pen to paper allowed me to breathe. So without, you know, and then when I got to LA, I started exploring yoga a little bit more, but still not really understanding what it was.
Right.
It was, I would say just within the last 5 years, I've been doing a lot of voice and movement techniques with my acting, and all of it comes back to breath. And because of working with my breath and then incorporating it into yoga, I'm just able to go into deeper places that allow my brain side to step out and allow my spirit, my soul to speak. And that it's been transformative in my work. I would say since like 2010, 2011 is when I started doing it. And now I'm trying to teach my daughter. I want the younger generations to be able to have this type of life fuel from themselves.
How old is your daughter?
She's two.
And what's her name? Well, you don't have to say her name. Did they teach her, is she in preschool?
She starts preschool at the end of this year.
Are they all you know, way out there where they, not way out there, I mean, like progressive where they would teach kids some breath and movement at that early of an age? I know it's in the schools.
Yeah, it's in schools now, and that's, yeah, they do. They have yoga. So I love that they have yoga. I chant. I do certain chants and meditations in the morning, and I'm starting to do them with her because I think the best way to teach somebody is just by example. So my husband and I have been chanting with her for the last 9 days, and now she comes and she sits and she chants with us. And then I teach her, we do a lot of big breaths, and then I teach her to blow out birthday candles. So when she gets upset, I try to help her breathe. And I think anything, as long as you're breathing, you can make great decisions. It's just that simple. Or you can navigate how you're feeling through a situation. I think we're so, as a culture, we're so like scared to feel our feelings when really they're just a barometer. They're like a guide map for where you need to go and what you're, you know, and what you need to do in order to live the best life.
Amen.
As cliched as that may sound.
No, I'm right on board with you. So Kyle, after high school,
yes.
Did you attend college?
After high school,
what did you study in college?
I was at the University of Kentucky, and at first I studied theater, and then I switched over to communications just so I could get out to LA as fast as possible and start doing what I wanted to do.
Well, okay, so you studied communications. How did you end up deciding to become an actress? Like, when did you first start acting and or modeling?
I had the dream of acting since I was four. So even when I was writing, learning how to write, in kindergarten, I said, I want to be in the TV when I grow up. And then I think it took me about 18 years to figure out who I was in the world and feel comfortable with saying that. I modeled. My mom didn't know exactly what to do with me. When you say you want to be an actress and you live in the middle of Kentucky, and the internet, not to date myself, wasn't a booming at the time and didn't have all the resources. So she put me in modeling at like, I don't know, nine, maybe. Yeah. 8, 9. I was a terrible model just because I always was so beat up from playing sports. I had bruises all over me. And then once I got to college, I felt like, it, especially after that senior year, that nice senior lap that I had, yeah. I felt more confident starting to explore what I wanted to do. And then about by sophomore year, I kicked it into high gear and was like, okay, I just want to get out of school and just get to LA.
So you moved from Kentucky to LA. It must have been a little bit of a shock. What was one of the oddest experiences that you can recall when you first moved there?
All of it. Like seeing people that I'd watched on TV all of a sudden be at a restaurant sitting next to me or walking down the street. I remember on my street when I first moved in, and in the same week, Brittany Murphy walked by on my street, and I was like, oh my God, we're Brittany Murphy. And then Chandler, Matthew Perry, parked in my driveway one morning, and he was like, hey, came up to the door and was like, hey, you know, so-and-so here. And I was like, you have the wrong house, Chandler? What are you doing here? Like, it was just such a surreal moment to be in the land of, so that's, I think, was most bizarre, surreal thing. And then traffic, that was just weird.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I haven't been out there, but I'm going there in a month.
Well, it's not even so much the density of traffic, it's how everything is so spread out, because we didn't have GPS on our phones then either. So it was like, oh, Wilshire's right here. Okay, so I live off Wilshire. I'll get on Wilshire here. Well, Wilshire's like 20 plus mile road. So I just would get lost all the time. Yeah, it was funny.
You move out there and you know, you've built up a nice career as an actress, which I want to ask you about. You play Lucy on True Detective. That's nominated for a Golden Globe. I want to ask you about Matthew McConaughey, who's your co-star on that show.
Yes. Okay.
Big pothead?
I did not see him personally smoking pot, but I would say the two trailers, I don't know whose trailer it was, but Woody and Matthew had custom made trailers and they were right next to each other. And when you walked by said trailers, you would get a nice aroma, you know,
okay,
of plants. I don't know whose trailer it was.
Does he walk around shirtless when the camera's off?
And not on this project. No, okay, he did not.
No, he did not. I'll stop being a dick. Okay. So you've been working steadily and have had roles on the television, on TV, with Satisfaction, How I Met Your Mother, Heart of Dixie, and in a big screen in movies, The Other Woman, Parker Marauders, and an upcoming indie film, She's in Portland. Before I get to the upcoming TV show, Life Sentence, which is the new show on the CW coming up next month, I want to ask you, what has been your favorite role, maybe one from television and then one from the movies, and why?
Okay, well, of course, Lucy, because it was just from the moment I read the script to the day that it came out on air, it was the most magical work environment for me. I'd always said that I wanted more time with characters. When you're a better well-known actress, you get months and months and months to prepare for a role. Yep. So this was my first time that I think I had, from the time I heard I booked it till I shot, I had a month. And it was just so glorious to really sink into my creative process with her.
Nice.
She's so rich in my body that I could sit here and have, you know, I have memories as her.
That's cool.
And then to get to work opposite Matthew, especially at that time, like he was just coming off Dallas Buyers Club and he was so protective of over his creativity. So to be like welcomed into his play box, like his sandbox for a couple episodes, I learned so much about running a set and how you want to be. And then, you know, you're working with the greats. Cary Fukunaga was just outstanding director. And then the DP, like what they were doing, I just learned so much about creativity and the art of storytelling. So that the fact that people received it so well was, I always say this, it wasn't even icing on top of the cake. It wasn't even the candles. It was like the candles being blown out. It was like just every wish come true. And also I just was very protective of that character. I tend to like to play misunderstood characters and really find the humanity in them. And Lucy, to me, just so badly wanted to be saved from a small town situation, which I can relate to.
Yeah.
I can really relate to. And then for film, last year I shot She's in Portland, which was magnificent. And I'm all tatted up and have a piercing, so I felt like the alter ego really got to come out. But what I'm most proud of is it's a film called Out of Blue. It's actually a BBC film that I had the honor of working with Patricia Clarkson and Jackie Weaver and James Caan and Toby Jones, like all these marathon runners of actors. Nice. So like the greats of the greats, like I'm in the same room and working with the person who did The Godfather. Like, it's just so trippy. And it was a character that I really swung for the fences. Like, I was really allowed to play, and I brought a lot of nuanced things to my audition, and the director called, and it was such a glorious privilege and win, because everything that was on the page, I just changed in different ways. And she had an idea of hiring somebody else, and then she said she watched my tape over 20 times. And
That's so awesome.
And that she had to hire me. So she's on a segue. It's going to be a pretty dynamic couple of scenes. And she's the complete opposite of Lucy, but yet still a Southerner at heart. So a lot of my upbringing has been able to infuse itself in some of my favorite characters.
That makes sense. But I really got to respect you and congratulate you on taking a chance from the script and giving it your own nuances and risking what to some people may be a cautious thing to do and not go that route, but you did and you got rewarded for it. I think that's cool.
Well, I think that's what makes art. I mean, we're so scared to always think outside of the box, and look, it could have gone really bad. She could have seen it and been like, not doing that at all. But for me, what I love about storytelling and acting and writing is that you can think of something new and nuanced and then put it into action where other people might see that and understand themselves better. I love.
Before I get to the upcoming TV show, Life Sentence, because I do have a lot of things to say about the trailer I saw. I really like it. You were in a movie, Bad Sister. And you conveniently left this off of your bio. Of course I would do my research and bring it up. You played a nun in a school, in a Catholic school, and you were the bad sister who, like, turned this boy in the school, you know, you hit on him and, like, had an affair, and then it all got crazy. Was it hard to play a character like that whose moral compass is so out of whack?
You know, those are the best characters to play. There's a lot of backstory on this project. First, it was called Fallen Sister, and it wasn't as dicey and racy as it ended up being. But what happened during that filming is I found out I was pregnant, thought I was never going to work again. And every day they kept like throwing new things at me, like, ooh, what about this like hallway scene where he's fantasizing about you? Or, ooh, what about confessional sex? Like all this crazy stuff. And I just was like, yes, 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 because this is the last time I'm ever going to work. Deep breath. Yes, yes, yes. And then I thought it would be so funny in my head. I'm like, oh my God, my daughter's going to see this someday and be like, yep, I was pregnant in that. There I am. But I also went to an all-girl Catholic school and was taught by nuns. And once again, you know, life or art emulates life, or, you know, vice versa. Sure. It was a lot of fun for me to dive into the, we used to always think like, what do the nuns do on the fourth floor? At our school, it was three floors of school, of classrooms. And then the nuns lived on the top floor. Getting this script, Fallen Angel, AKA Bad Sister, I would always be like, what do they do up there? Like, what do they think about? Do they ever think about, you know, sex or all these dangerous things? But funny you bring it up. I love all the fans out there that love that movie so much. It is a crowd pleaser, that one. It is a and I've thought about sending it to the nuns that taught me and just saying thank you. I don't know how that would be received, but I would mean it in, you know, deepest gratitude.
And all the fans that really like that, just keep an arm's distance away. You're all special in your own way. Just stay away.
Oh, yeah, you guys. So, yeah, it's always fun to play the not-so-great characters. There's just so many different arenas of life that you get to explore in a safe way.
You did a really good job with it. I mean, look, I asked you about it because I'm fascinated talking to you. Clearly, I know I'm not talking to that character. I'm talking to a person who played the character, who that character is so out of control that I just wanted to ask what it's like. It's interesting to play a character like that, I'm sure. So I'm trying to understand more.
Well, I think really you just have to find, like I said earlier, you have to find the humanity in all characters. So characters that are AKA bad or do bad things, or they don't think of themselves as bad. So what was fun to play was like that she really thought in some ways she was saving this boy. Like, you know, that they are really meant to be, that they're just in love. And I mean, think about like, I love Hal Ashby's movie, like Harold and Maude, and like just playing with the idea of why does like love and sexuality have to have a certain age? Like, obviously it's Lifetime, so she's going to go overboard with everything. But it was a fun topic to explore and also quite humorous to make while we were doing it. It was
I can only
funny.
Imagine.
Yeah.
We do have a fascination with the anti-heroes. Too many shows to even name.
Right. And I think if you can, the anti-hero, as long as they're likable, that's what's like so interesting as an audience member. You don't want to like them, but you do. And that's when the actor finds the humanity in them. Like you're attracted to them. It's compelling.
You root for the anti-hero because they have humanity.
It's so fun to watch people do things that they're not supposed to do. Because let's face it, we've all thought about it for a second. We've just been trained by society to not operate on those impulses.
Yes.
That's what humanity really boils down to, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think in Life Sentence, you have another great character who's fascinating that you're playing. And I watched the trailer because it's not out yet. It's going to come out in March on the CW. And I think that, and I'm being totally sincere and honest with you, I really think this show is different and it has something. There's something there that's special and unique. And I'll let you talk about the plot and then the character that you play, you know, rather than me get deeper into it. But I really think that there's something there. For real.
I so agree with you. And I had the special privilege, honor, front seat to how the show was created. So one of my best girlfriends created the show.
Wow.
And I have to take you back to the first, like we were having lunch. It was after I had the baby. And it was like maybe 6 months after having the baby. And she's always so creative and inspiring. And I love the way she tells stories. And she was starting to really catch a break in Hollywood as far as her writing being read by great people and selling shows. And she was like, I think we have a new idea for a show, you know, like the whole idea of what happens if you've been given a life sentence, aka the show title, the show, and you know you're going to die, you have terminal cancer, like so many people unfortunately have to deal with, and then they live their life. And what happens if you live like you're dying and then all of a sudden you're not? Like you make all these wonderful, great decisions to live life to the fullest, but then what happens 2 months later if all of a sudden you're cured and you have to live with these choices you've made? And when she told me, I had chills. I was like, oh, this is the show, babe. Like this is the show that's going to be around for a while because it placates to so many different emotions and family that we don't discuss because if somebody's, you know, dying or not doing well, you just hide things from each other to keep that perfect persona going when you're facing death. And they explore family in such a dynamic different way. And I think with shows like This Is Us or Parenthood used to be my favorite. And now, of course, This Is Us.
Yeah.
This is another beautiful family show in which you have to deal with your imperfections and your weaknesses and your mistakes and deception. And how do you operate within a family like that? And they do it so beautifully. And then I was so, so beyond privileged and honored and touched to be able to play in this arena. So she, Erin, my girlfriend who created the show with her partner, Rich, they called and they had a fun character for me to come and play because also this is a dramedy. So this isn't hardcore drama and it's not hardcore comedy. It floats down the line of dramedy so well. And it's such a hard genre to achieve. And they did it excellent. I cannot wait for everybody to see this show. You're going to trip out. And also the person who did the director who did the pilot, he's very cinematic. He does a lot of independent films. So what he was able, the cameras that he brought in, how he shot this, it is gorgeous. Like I had read the pilot several times. I acted in the pilot. When I sat down and watched the pilot, I cried. I cried and I laughed. And I think that's really hard to achieve when you already work in the storytelling arena, to be surprised and be caught off guard with your emotions. And I'm so proud. I'm so proud is not the right word because I don't have any ownership in it. I'm inspired by this type of storytelling and I'm honored to just be a part of this small story.
It's interesting you spoke about the dramedy and how it's very difficult to achieve that successfully, to walk that fine line. But I got to be honest with you, those are my favorite shows.
Right? They're the best shows that way. Because that's what life is. If you're doing life right, isn't it kind of a dramedy constantly?
Absolutely.
So I am very attracted to shows like that.
Can you talk about your character?
So Lucy Hale is the one who has cancer. Lucy Hale, and then Gillian Vigman plays her mom, and Brooke Lyons is her sister, and Jason Blair is her brother. Elliot Knight plays her lover that you'll meet in the pilot, and then Dylan Walsh plays her dad. So I play a character that is in Jason Blair's life, so her brother's life. Uh-huh. And I can't say too much because... It'll give away a good cliffhanger of the pilot. Okay. But let's just say that my character, absolutely, her favorite types of movies are those hopeful romantic cancer movies like Fault in Our Stars. She wants to, you know, like she loves those types of movies. She is quite lonely in her own life and sees this family as a way to really live her best life. Let me just say that.
Okay.
I was really allowed to play with, once again, I made her, she has a lot of conflict in her own life. And according to what the show is called, Life Sentence, Marlene has kind of her own said life sentence that she's trying to work through as well.
That's interesting.
And deceit and deception and what's real and what's not real in her life. So she gets to dabble in that whole world and the message behind the show.
When is the launch date, the time and the day on the CW?
So it's March 7th at 9 p.m. on the CW. So we're right after Riverdale.
Yeah, and no joke, for real. This is, go look at the freaking trailer on YouTube or CW's website. It's going to draw you in. It's very compelling, for sure.
It's so compelling. And Lucy Hale is... dynamic. I've said this so many times in the last 6 months since knowing her. She's a star. She's captivating. She's so adorable. They should give some awards for this. You know, I know that they're starting to acknowledge the CW, like they acknowledge Jane the Virgin. I really want to see them acknowledge Lucy. Her work in this is effortlessly beautiful. And you're going to fall in love with Stella.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I want to do a segue because you also have a podcast and it's called That One Audition. And it's about when you go on auditions as an actor or actress and things might not be so great on that one audition.
It's basically survival skills and audition tales that people have had along their whole longevity of their career. So it's Hollywood storytellers and influencers. So it goes from, you know, I'm interviewing heavily actors right now, but also directors, writers, showrunners. So much of the entertainment industry is so highlighted, like, oh, you're playing this character in this movie. Tell us all about it.
Yeah.
I care about how they got that part. And I don't feel like there's a really good how-to inspirational podcast out there for actors or artists or storytellers that are trying to stay in the game, because it's a really tough industry. And a lot of people think that it happens overnight. And I've been doing this for about 7 years. I've been doing the interviews for 7 years with the idea of making it a coffee table book. I thought it'd be so cool to like 101 most unforgettable auditions told from and then about 6 to 9 months ago, I was like, you know what? I've been waiting for a book deal. I've been waiting to get the right rights or however to do it. And I was like, why don't I just do it as a podcast? Cause also actors or storytellers are so wonderful in their voice and tone. And you know, here's this platform, this free platform for me to inspire other storytellers. So since I've switched over to this format, I'm loving it. Cause now you really get to see, connect the dots and the journey to where the artist is now, told through various failed auditions, great auditions, you know.
I got to say, you know, because this is, out of all we've spoke about so far, besides, you know, you were supposed to be a guy and I was supposed to be a girl. I can't speak about, you know, television and movies, but I can speak about the audio format and radio and podcasting. So that's where I can be a little more critical when I'm really paying attention to content. And it's something that makes me belly laugh, which is rare. And I listened to your trailer episode and I was by myself and I did a spit take, which is, I'm not an easy laugh, you know, like there's no charity in my laughs. And it was really funny. Could you tell the story about your audition that you did, that you told in the trailer episode? Because the people that came to my show, I think it will pull them to your podcast, which they should listen to, because besides the trailer episode, your podcast is good. It's a good listen and it's entertaining as a whole, but your trailer episode is what really pulled me in.
Okay. Well, the trailer episode is what originated this whole idea in the first place. Because why does everybody act so cool? Like, whenever I go home, people are always like, oh, how's Hollywood? I'm like, you know, it's not as cool or great as it always seems. So I love telling this story in reverse and backwards. So I was going to a class at the time where everybody in my class, my acting class, was working like series regulars, reoccurrings, and every week we would share at the beginning of class, like our auditions or what happened that week or where we were with our progress. And that day I had gone on a callback audition for Axe commercial body spray. Everybody knows what Axe is.
Sure.
And I am at this point still really young in my career. I'm just stoked about getting a callback. I have to wear a bikini in my callback. And I just don't have that kind of confidence that some women have that should be wearing a bikini at auditions. Well,
you have to tuck it in. I mean, you're Kyle.
I'm Kyle. Exactly. Kyle does not like, and Kyle likes to have a few beers every once in a while. So, you know, sometimes he's not ready for bikini season, like that moment. But Kyle had to go. Kyle really likes this waiting room, let me just tell you. So the waiting room is the best part for auditions for girls, because it's a bunch of girls staring at each other, not saying anything. Although I like to always talk, and because I just am a friendly person is the way I look at it. I show up.
Because you're bringing me with you, which is great. You're a good storyteller. And that's something that I really appreciate. So I'm with you right now. I'm with you in the waiting room, whatever you call it, you know, the casting room, waiting to be called in. And you talk to the girls around you in a room where you're telling me most people don't talk. How is that received when you did that?
Oh, usually nobody says anything. Like, I'll do things like, hey, is anybody running to the bathroom? Silence. And like every once in a while, there'll be one girl that's like, oh, it's right down the hall. I'm like, okay. And then I'll come back. And sometimes, I mean, I don't do it to mess with people, but if I'm feeling compelled to talk to somebody, like some girl had, you know, really nice shoes on. I'm like, ooh, where'd you get those shoes? Like, why do we have to be so, I don't know. It's so weird. And
why is that? What's the psychology behind it? It's like, you're my kid, I can't talk to you.
I think it's a competition thing. And then also for some people, they like to prep, you know, like they're using that time to prep or like get in the mood. But this is also a commercial audition. So like, come on, we don't have to like get in the mood. I think at this point, honestly, the reason why the waiting room is kind of quiet is because everybody feels uncomfortable and insecure about having to go in their bikinis, except for one girl in the waiting room.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. She, well, all due respect to her, her body was banging. She looks like, for the sake of the story, I always say she looks like Giselle. Like, everybody is also staring at Giselle because it's like, she's like been chiseled out of marble. She's just beautiful. And you can see every like microfiber of her muscles. She's just a gorgeous specimen of a human being. And she is not... She does not have like a cover up on. I don't know if she brought a cover up, but she's sitting in the waiting room with no cover up on, just her gorgeous body in a bikini. And they call us in 2 by 2. And I had this gut feeling, like that said voice that talked to me when I was blowing up my knee and whenever else it decides to talk to me, it was like, oh yeah, you're going in with Giselle. I was like, no. And then the casting director was like, okay, Alicia, Giselle. Of course he didn't say Alicia. He probably said Alicia and Giselle. Like, yeah. And so I go in with Giselle with my head already hung low because I'm like, oh God, this is just awful. And we go in the room and there's a lot of guys in the room. So the director, obviously a guy, casting director, a guy, and a lot of extra people, which it might've been the client, or I always think that it was like the guy the director who called his buddies and was like, hey, I have girls running in bikinis. You should come watch this session today.
I think you're right. That's kind of a scumbag thing to do, but I think you're right on that.
I just, like, it just was too many guys in that room for it to be the client, but maybe it was. So either way, he describes the spot, like what the commercial is, and it's supposed to be we haven't eaten in days or years, however. He's like, he keeps exaggerating. It's been a long time since we've eaten. And we smell the most delicious piece of meat, and we're going to run through the woods, through the ocean, over the hills to find and fight our way to this one piece of meat.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So he asked me to disrobe politely, like whenever I was ready. So I had to walk across the room, take off my clothes, walk back in my bikini, which I always say I just jiggled my way back to Giselle. And we are shoulder to shoulder. And he's like, okay, run. And we're like running in place. And now he's directing us. He's like, he's run harder, faster, shove each other. And I shoved her. And then I let out a fart. It could have been recorded for like a special sound effect. Like sound guys, they like talk about sound. That is a fart that they want to record. That noise. And it was a noise that I'd never heard my body make before. And I'm still so proud of myself to this day because I was in an improv comedy class at the time. So I looked at Giselle and I was like, how dare you fart, you gorgeous goddess, you. And now I'm full gloating. Like I am so joyed by my improv skills. Like, girl, you are on it. And as soon as I was done gloating, like maybe a total of 4 seconds before I let another one rip. Like it was like I had no control of my body. Bodily fluids functions at that time. Then the director kind of stopped talking at that point, thanked us for our time while he was like sneering through a smile. Like you could just, it was like that quiver of your face when you're trying so hard not to laugh. Oh yeah. So that's, so then I went to class that night, and when I went to class, everybody's like, oh, I booked a recurring, I'm testing for this show, I'm going to be whatever. And they got to me and I was like, yeah, well, I farted in my audition today. Not once, but twice. And I'm really proud of myself because my improv skills. And then it just erupted into everybody sharing these ridiculous audition stories. And that's where I was like, more people need to hear this side of our industry. Because we're constantly just making fools of ourselves and we're not perfect or polished or glamorized all of the time. 99% of the time, we are definitely
not. Isn't that so cool though that, you know, something that was an awkward experience and, you know, very uncomfortable sparked your creativity to say, you know what? This is a story that needs to be told. And there's a million other stories like this that can be told that people just don't understand. They don't see it.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's like a twofold. Like it's good inspiration for anybody in any type of career because you interview constantly and you get all hyped up. So there's that element to it. There's a sensationalism around it where you want to see some of the people that you idolize, like you want to hear how they got there, and just industry people. Like it's kind of, it's funny when you hear how other people, not funny, but inspiring when you hear how other people have failed and now you see them succeeding. Like you want to hear those stories of how you redeem yourself in farting situations. Like
absolutely. One thing I wanted to ask, but I couldn't when I was listening to that on the trailer episode of that one audition, your podcast, was what did the girl who you referred to as Giselle, how did she react the first time you blamed it on her?
I don't, honestly, once again, actors being self-involved, I don't really remember because I was so mortified by farting. And then once I glanced at her and did the, you know, I looked back out at the crowd because I was like, well, that's not my problem. So I don't know if, and I don't, I think it was one of those loud ones. You know, like sometimes when it's, sorry, we're talking farts now, but when it's silent, it's deadly. Like that's when you get nervous when you have a silent fart because you're like, oh, I don't know how that's going to smell. But when it's loud and makes your butt cheeks vibrate, those don't usually, they already pack the punch with the noise. So they don't smell bad usually.
It's either one or the other.
Well, it's usually one or the other.
In all fairness, were they able to clear the room with Axe body spray?
I mean, yes, they cleared the room without me in that commercial. I did not get hired for that spot, which I probably should have pitched myself afterwards to be like, you guys, now let's use the body spray to clean up my dude. Like, if Funny or Die would have been around at that time, I think that would have been a fantastic front page spot for them.
Oh my
God. Girls running in a bikini. One farts, and then somebody comes in with Axe body spray. Done. Wouldn't you buy it?
I would. It makes me memorable. It makes me remember the commercial. Did the girl just end up getting the spot?
I think so. Okay. I think so. I saw it a few months ago, and the thing that's so embarrassing and sad about this is they hired so many girls. So I guarantee you everybody at the callback got that spot except for said farty face right here.
All right. Alicia Oxy, thank you so much for coming on the Yoga Moves You podcast. I want to say once again that you have your own podcast called That One Audition. I encourage everyone to check that out. Also, you have a TV show coming out called Life Sentence on the CW and the movie on the BBC. Can you reference that one more time with James Caan and a bunch of other people?
Yeah, it's Out of Blue, and that should be out later, hopefully this fall. And then I have The Beach House coming out on Hallmark Channel with Andy McDowell and Minka Kelly and Chad Michael Murray in May. I know the date of that one. That one's out in May of this year.
Congratulations, for real, for keeping a career alive in an industry that's just tough to even start a career.
So thanks, man. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I can see why, because you have a very down-to-earth side to you, and I think that helps.
I try. I try to keep both feet here on the ground.
Casey Kasem, keep both feet in the ground and reach for the stuff.
Yeah, right.
All right, there you go. Alicia Oxy, thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. Podcast with
your host, Andrew Gordon. Hey, you.
Yes, you.
And you.
And you over there.
I see you. Stop hiding. Hi, how are you?
It's Andrew. I want to invite you to a place where the show never ends. The Yoga Moves You Podcast Facebook group. It's a special Facebook group for the Yoga Moves You Podcast listeners where you can connect, give feedback, ideas for the show, ask questions, and spread love. Head over to Facebook and search for the Yoga Moves You Podcast. I look forward to seeing you there.